This is number 0044, the Stuff File Program, with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0044. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File, we'll meet Tim O'Brien, who is the executive producer and one of the hosts of Ripley Radio. How was the show created?
You know, with the name Ripley, we've got a lot of potential and a lot of possibilities. So I started looking around, and over a two-year period, we kind of narrowed it down and said, you know, a podcast, or an oddcast as we call it, of being Ripley's, is ideal because we've got facilities in 13 different countries. Our newspaper clipping and our cartoon is still seen in over 42 different countries. So we should make something that's available to anybody in the world, anytime, anywhere.
Michael Largo is the author of God's Lunatics. What's the subtitle of the book?
It's subtitled Lost Souls, False Prophets, Martyred Saints, Murderous Cults, Demonic Nuns, and Other Victims of Man's Eternal Search for the Divine. So that's a pretty long subtitle, but it kind of sums it up.
Plus, it's the return of Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, who shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge.
Okay, I don't want anybody to think that this is some type of an epidemic in New York City. I mean, it's more an example of the fact that we're probably the most litigious, society in America. What had happened is that a bus driver was spat upon by a deranged passenger in some kind of a dispute. Well, okay, so it happened, move on. Not quite when it's New York City.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0044, is Driggs, guitar player and host of Riff Rage on CyberStationUSA.com. I actually know his real name, but I'm not allowed to give it out on the air. Something to do with statute of limitations and restraining orders. I can tell you that he escaped from the state of Maine and is lurking somewhere in the greater Boston area. But if I say any more than that, I may be forced to become a material witness. Anyway, you can see into the mind of a longtime musician by tuning into Riff Rage every Saturday with Driggs for great classic rock to the modern day grinding riffs. That's every Saturday on CyberStationUSA.com, or at least until the authorities catch up with him. Thank you very much, Driggs, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? And we start off with a story in Germany that involves a puppy. Don't get too warm and fuzzy. A German student created a major traffic jam in Bavaria after making a rude gesture to a group of Hell's Angels motorcycle gang members, hurling a puppy at them, and then escaping on a stolen bulldozer. German police said that after making his getaway from the Hell's Angels club, the 26-year-old dumped the bulldozer, causing a 5-kilometer traffic jam near the southern town of Allershausen. He then fled to his home nearby, where he was apprehended by police. What motivated him to throw a puppy at the Hell's Angels is currently unclear, said a police spokesperson, adding that the student had lately been suffering from depression. The puppy, by the way, is now in safe hands. I don't know, maybe he was suicidal. Maybe he was thinking of death by Hell's Angels. It's a possibility. But throwing a puppy? Anyway, moving right along. Taiwan's China Airlines has been fined the equivalent of $9,400 for discriminating against shorter people applying for jobs as flight attendants. Now, the airline violated employment law when it ran an advertisement in April imposing minimum height requirements for applicants, according to the Taipei City Government's Labor Department. The company defended itself by saying that cabin crew needed to be tall enough to reach the overhead compartments, but the department ruled that it had hurt the rights of applicants not meeting the requirements. More than 8,000 people, including 350 university graduates, applied for the 92 flight attendant jobs that was offered earlier this year. The airline initially imposed a minimum height requirement of 5 feet 4 inches for female applicants and 5 feet 7 inches for men. Okay, this is the dumbest thing I've heard this month. It's not discrimination if you're not physically capable of doing the job. People who are over 6 feet tall and 200 pounds are never going to be jockeys. People who are blind are not going to be cab drivers. Anybody who is just a head above a drink trolley isn't going to be a flight attendant. What's the issue here? Like it says at most amusement park rides, you're not tall enough to be on the ride? You're not on the ride. Case closed. Anyway, let's move on to something more charitable, shall we? Joe Cooper might want to think twice the next time he's asked to participate in a bikini waxing fundraiser for charity. Cooper, who is 24, was left in agony after an intimate beauty waxing event at a pub went a bit too far and he nearly lost a testicle. "I'd never do it again. I wouldn't put any man through that pain," he told the British media, because this took place in London. Cooper and 10 male friends had agreed to undergo the waxing on June the 5th to raise cash for a local hospital. But all the others had just their chests waxed, while Joe endured the male Brazilian. Onlookers placed bids to pull the strips off in the charity event, which was done at a pub in Bristol, Leicester. One of the strips stuck to a very sensitive spot, and an overly energetic tug by one of his friends tore off 6 of his 7 layers of skin. Pub manager Josh Adcock, there's an unfortunate name, told the UK Daily Mail, "Joe's a bit of a clown. He likes to do things like that. People were bidding quite a lot to have a rip. I was laughing, but I did feel quite sorry for him, especially as we had a disco later and he couldn't walk. Cooper wound up at the hospital. You can imagine how much everyone was laughing at me. It was ironic. I was meant to be helping them, and they ended up helping me. They told me that if any more skin had come off, that would have been it. I was very, very lucky," he was quoted as saying. Cooper, who has so far helped to raise about $4,000 for the Leicester Royal Infirmary's Children Ward, added, "I just hope people will sponsor me more now, because I'm still hurting." Now there's a story that was literally ripped from the headlines. Moving right along, we go to Tennessee. A messy box of ribs left in a Clarksville parking lot caused police to call in the bomb squad and a bomb inspecting robot. Police blocked off the city's public square after someone noticed a box with a warning on the side saying anyone who touched it would lose their hands. Police said the owner of the box was soon located. The woman told police that she was from Chicago and had brought the ribs with her when she came to town for a family reunion. She had left the box in the parking lot to dry after she took out the ribs. The warning was just simply a joke. No charges have been filed. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News with me, Peter Anthony Holder, we go to Madison, Wisconsin. Madison, Wisconsin neighbors Nina Bell, who is 56, and Arnessa Battles, who is 38, were cited for disorderly conduct in March in a dispute over Battles' dog's winter-long output of droppings that had just been revealed by the melting snow. According to the police report, by the time an officer arrived on the scene, both of the women had smeared each other's cars with large quantities of dog poop. Yes, isn't that just a fine, warm, and fuzzy neighborhood-like story for you? Before we get to our first guest, that's just weird and odd. Let's move along, shall we? If you are familiar with the brand name Ripley's Believe It or Not, and who isn't, then you'll be glad to know that there is now a radio show online that carries on the tradition. The show is called Ripley Radio, an on-demand oddcast. On the line with us right now is Tim O'Brien, who is the Ripley Radio Executive Producer and one of the hosts of the show. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Peter. I'm glad to be on your show.
Thanks for being here with us. So this show, I think actually, if I'm not mistaken, looking at your website, started at around the same time that the Stuff File program started back in September.
Absolutely. I think it was on September 17th our first episode came out.
Now, what was the impetus for putting your show together? I mean, mine was abject poverty. I don't know what yours was.
Well, I needed to figure out ways to spend more of Ripley's money, I guess. I don't know. I've been an employee of Ripley, and it's been in the back of my mind. I'm an old radio guy from the 60s and 70s, so I always thought it would be fun to do another radio show. And we were starting to investigate different ways to syndicate a radio show. With the name Ripley, we've got a lot of potential and a lot of possibilities. So I started looking around, and over a two-year period, we kind of narrowed it down and said, a podcast, or an oddcast as we call it, being Ripley's, is ideal because we've got facilities in 13 different countries. Our newspaper clipping and our cartoon is still seen in over 42 different countries. So we should make something that's available to anybody in the world, anytime, anywhere. So we narrowed it down to the internet, and when Ripley went off the radio originally in 1947, he'd been on the radio for 14 years with a regular weekly broadcast. Then he switched over to television, and we hadn't had any radio presence at all, other than you interviewing me on your on your previous shows and so forth in those 63 years. So we thought, it would be time and it would be fun to do it.
Now, since as you said, Ripley hasn't been on radio for a long time, are there certain aspects of the online show that are very reminiscent of what the old radio show is, or is it something totally new and different?
Basically, it's totally new and different. We have a 30-second clip. We write run every other episode or whatever, and that's like an old-time radio segment from Ripley Radio itself, like those old-timers, believe it or not, one of these type of things. It's great. But we're starting to run out of those. And we're having fun with them. And but we wanted to make it contemporary. We have a lot of fun. We do a lot of music in it. We do a lot of contemporary music and a lot of fun music. Like we had an episode dedicated to tattooed ladies a while back. And I was able to dust off some of these old silly songs about tattooed women and, tattooed with a map all over their back of America, North America, just fun stuff. We have a lot of fun. We have different segments. We have a lot of different interviews. We don't, it's not like a talk radio. It's more of an entertainment radio show because we're broken down in about 7 to 10 different segments each episode.
How long is the show?
It will run anywhere right now. That's one of the nice things about being on the web. You can go at any time, any length that you want, since we host it ourselves as well. We go anywhere between 40 and 55 minutes per episode. And right now, we only do 2 episodes a month. We were weekly for the first 26 episodes, and then we cut back for the summer. And then this fall, hopefully, probably in October, we're going to go back to weekly.
Now, you mentioned tattoos. Did you have Groucho Marx singing Lydia the Tattooed Lady?
Oh, absolutely. That was one of them. I couldn't wait to get that one on. And, and some people, it's so funny because I subscribe to e-music. And e-music, the songs are like 45 cents a piece or whatever when you download them. And we've got our ASCAP and BMI license and all this stuff, so we can play anything we want. But it's so fun to get on there and, just search for a song. And, I found 11 different songs that are entitled Believe It or Not. So we're actually playing those off and on throughout the shows as well. Sometimes we'll play a full song. Sometimes we'll just play a musical bridge or whatever. It's whatever hits us, really. And then we usually close the show out with an instrumental of some sort. I like Gary Huey. I don't know if you're familiar with him or not, but we play a lot of his instrumentals toward the end of the show. And a lot of the low straight jacket, a lot of the surf guitar stuff. And so we dust off whatever the subject of the show is.
Now, one of the things that's certainly different between online radio and terrestrial radio, terrestrial radio is very, very competitive. I mean, here I am talking to you about a radio show that, quite frankly, is very similar to some of the stuff that I do. And it's more of a community situation when you're online. The fact that I would have you on our show to talk about some of the same guests that we have. Not only have you had some of the same guests on your show that I've had on my show, you've had personal friends of mine on your show.
So that means I'm going to have to get you on my show, too, down the line here. Yeah, isn't that nice, though? I mean, it is a, because none of us sell advertising at this point. I think we'd all like to in the future. But right now, it's more out of the act of love to play radio and, you know, kind of go from there. And yes, we've had some of the same guests. And I noticed that another show that's very similar to ours is Rob Connell, X-Zone. And I was looking at his lineup from last night, and he had two of the three guests I had on last month. So the same people are doing the circuit of these types of shows.
Now, what is the game plan? As you mentioned, when October rolls around, you want to go back to weekly, perhaps. And it accents what you do with the whole Ripley brand. Since you've been doing the show from September, what's the reaction been from either regular Ripley fans or new ones?
We've gotten both, and we've gotten good response. I'm sure we don't have the following that you have at this particular point, because we are very niche, a lot more than you, I believe, niche as far as being weird and unusual and focused on the sometimes a macabre. So we don't have a huge following at this point. It's building. Every episode, I'm tracking it, and we are gaining, you know, a few every show, but our goal here is to not be a infomercial for Ripley's, but to be very, very Ripley's. We talk about Ripley's all the way through. Ralph with an F, which is my co-host, actually works for Ripley's, runs our ghost train over in St. Augustine, Florida. But we talk a lot about Ripley, about our new archives. We have a newsletter that comes out every Monday called The Weekly Weird. And it's free into people's news email boxes. And we do segments about that in each episode as well. And then we go into the archives, which we call Into the Vault, with our archivist of 33 years, Edward Meyer. And we go in there, and he talks about either something that pertains to what we're talking about or just about some of our new acquisitions. Like, for example, our show that just came up on the 15th of this month is all about horror. And we interviewed Chris Alexander of Fangoria magazine. So we based the whole show around that. And Edward takes us in to the archives and talks about probably the scariest thing we have, as far as if you know the history about it, is the Iron Maiden, which is a torture and death device back in the 14th, 15th, and 16th centuries. So we talk about that. We talk about the burial crypt that's above Marilyn Monroe. That's kind of funny, about the guy that bought it and wanted to be buried in it. Facing down, so he'll spend eternity laying above Marilyn Monroe. And when he died, his wife said, "I'm not going to bury him there." And she's all trying to sell the vault off, and she cremated him and put him somewhere. I don't know. And then we also have a lot of fun. We talk to the guy he's called the Fry King, and he basically is a chef who deep fries everything from ice cream to Twinkies to Oreos to chicken, whatever you have. He puts it on a stick and deep fries it. And so we have a lot of fun, and we go the various ways. But it all comes back to the Ripley sense of humor and the Ripley focus on the weird, unusual, and the bizarre.
And where do the listeners actually find the show? I know there's the website, ripleyoddcast.com. Is that the only place, or are there others?
That's the best place. You go to any of our Ripley sites for any of our attractions. There's our Ripley radio logo. It's kind of a brownish logo with one of those old-fashioned microphones on it. You can click on that, and that'll take you to the Oddcast page. So that's where we are, and we have the archives of all of our shows. Right now we've got the 32nd show up, and But all the shows are available there. And you can go to iTunes as well. We're on iTunes, and you can go to just look Ripley Oddcast, and you can find our whole lineup there as well. And you can download from there.
Excellent. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Tim, and congratulations with the new show.
Well, thanks, Peter. We definitely got to get you on our show to talk about some of the weird stuff that you've experienced.
Well, looking forward to it.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Tim O'Brien, who is the Ripley Radio executive producer and one of the hosts of Ripley Radio, an on-demand oddcast. You can check out their website at www.ripleyoddcast.com. And, of course, you'll find the link on my website at thestufffile.com. You're listening to The Stuff File with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
What are they saying about If the Rains Don't Cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Avidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. You're listening to the Stuff File program. It's the choice of 4 out of 5 dentists. The 5th dentist also listens, but that's just because he follows the crowd. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we will talk to the author of God's Lunatics, plus the return of Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby from New York City, and of course, an idiot of the day. But right here, more stuff right now. And we go to Connecticut for our next story. Connecticut State Police said a man they believe was on drugs mistook a home for a bed and breakfast and went to sleep in a bedroom. Police said a couple told them they were spending time with relatives in their home when a family member went inside and found a credit card on the stairs. Investigators said they found Walker Bruce, age 45, asleep in a bedroom. Bruce told them he had mistaken the house for a bed and breakfast and left his credit card on the stairs as payment. Police said Bruce appeared disoriented and is believed to have been under the influence of drugs. Bruce was charged with third-degree burglary and taken to Middlesex Clinic in Essex for examination. Okay, I understand that he did break into the place, but really, charged with burglary? Charge him for being under the influence of drugs, and maybe that's what you can have him on. But the guy did make an honest mistake, albeit while under the influence, and therein is the crime. He didn't really break in. He put his credit card there. He thought he was in a bed and breakfast. Cut him some slack. Gosh. Meanwhile, Jonathan Metz, age 31, was repairing the furnace in his West Hartford, Connecticut home when he got his arm stuck. So stuck that by the next day, his arm was starting to get gangrenous. So he reached for some tools and started to work on cutting his arm off to free himself. It was the right thing to do, according to Dr. Scott Elner, a trauma surgeon at the hospital Metz ended up at. This man saved his own life. Metz had almost completed the task when police, summoned by a friend concerned over Metz's disappearance, found him. He had been trapped for nearly 3 days. Of course, he was repairing the furnace by himself, you know. If he were to buy a new one, that would have cost him an arm and a leg. Meanwhile, Jim Harris, who is 56, was sitting in the recliner in his Florida home when, and this is a quote, I leaned over to turn on the lamp and kapow! Bubba fell on him. Bubba is what he calls the 200-pound stuffed head of a water buffalo, which was mounted on his wall. Harris estimates he was unconscious for about 2 hours, and when he woke up, he was trapped under the thing. He was able to reach his cell phone, though, and called for help. It took 4 rescuers to get Bubba off him. I guess it's payback for the buffalo, but I'm not even the guy who shot him, Harris said. This is so embarrassing as to get my ass kicked by a dead water buffalo. Nature always gets the last laugh, you know. Yes, it does. Speaking of which, if you don't know, in Mexico City, they take their bullfighting very seriously, so much so that Matador Christian Hernandez was arrested after he took off across the ring and jumped over the wall, fleeing from a charging bull. The arrest at the Plaza Mexico was for breach of contract, as he then refused to return to the ring and finish the bullfight. The 22-year-old later said in a television interview, "I didn't have the ability, I didn't have the guts. This is not my thing." Of course, the crowd booed in anger, but give the boy a break. Several months ago, another bull severely gored Hernandez in the leg. He now plans to retire from bullfighting. Yes, you see, nature always gets the last laugh. Well, it looks like being in the ice cream truck business is a lot tougher than it used to be. Police in Marysville, Washington say an ice cream vendor threatened another vendor with a knife and told her to get off his turf. The suspect admitted to talking to with a woman in the cul-de-sac, but denied making threats. But police found a knife in his truck and arrested him for investigation of assault. The woman said she didn't think she was violating the unwritten code among vendors about where they sell frozen treats. Boy, it's quite territorial when it comes to ice cream, isn't it? And finally, in this section of the Stuff File News with me, Peter Anthony Holder, in Decatur, Tennessee, police are considering charges against a man who apparently swam across the main Tennessee River channel twice and watched in amusement while local police, fire, and rescue departments searched for about 3 hours for a possible drowning victim. The 33-year-old man apparently walked from his home to a private dock in front of condos near Rhodes Ferry Park. Two witnesses saw the guy jump in off the private pier at about 10:10 p.m., but never saw him resurface. Turns out he swam to the Riverwalk Marina and watched the search from the Hard Dock Cafe. It's also believed he made the 911 call from his own cell phone. He later swam back across the river. Divers were in the water searching until well after midnight. He could now face charges for filing a false report. What a moron. Okay, let's get to our next guest on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Michael Largo is a writer who was on our old radio show several times. He has a new book out. It's just out, called God's Lunatics. It's published by Harper Paperbacks. It examines how religious fanatics, past and present, impact culture and politics. Michael joins us via Skype-to-Skype communication. Hi, Michael.
Hello, Peter. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on with us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, it's often said that people who talk to God, that's faith. People who get a response back from God, that's psychosis.
There you go. Yes. You know, if nowadays, if you say you actually spoke with an angel, say, for example, you're usually quickly medicated. But it wasn't that way, it seemed, 100 years ago or even 1,000 years ago. You would very likely get a following. And that's kind of what I've traced in this new book, God's Lunatics. It's subtitled Lost Souls, False Prophets, Martyred Saints, Murderous Cults, Demonic Nuns, and Other Victims of Man's Eternal Search for the Divine. So that's a pretty long subtitle, but it kind of sums it up. What I did was make a catalog of all the historical spiritual movements and religions into a sort of consumer's guide, a 500-and-something-page book, to give you every idea of what people did to try to find that question, where did we come from? Where do we go? How do we live? It's been plaguing humanity since we first arrived on this planet.
Now, would you tend to say that the subject or the title of your book speaks more of what's happening today or in the past, or has it always been on a level plane?
Well, it's what's interesting, what I found, Peter, during the research of this book, is that some of the religions that we have today, obviously their foundations are 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years old, and their documents were maybe apropos to that particular time, But yet they're still followed with the same type of diligence today, and that's what causes some problems in our society, as we know what religion is doing today in some areas.
In doing your research, what was the item or topic that surprised you the most, historically speaking?
Well, historically speaking, I mean, I think the proselytizing and trying to convert others has been the most dangerous historical trend. I mean, when someone gets an idea, see, what I tried to do is differentiate between the line of spirituality and religion. Spirituality has very, very many philosophical, ethical things that are apropos to making people live well and live better. But once things started to move into the religion aspect, it had to be organized, and others had to start believing in the same set of principles. And then from that, various disciplines, let's put it that way, were enforced in order to keep people believing that same particular train of thought. And it's what I found was interesting was that in history, say during Greek times, everyone believed. I mean, if you said that you didn't believe in Athena, the god of Athens, you were considered a heretic. And now we know that the whole cast of Greek mythology characters, is a little bit ludicrous. But yet the same type of thing applies today, where we have all these various gods that we've created. And if you don't believe, then there's something wrong with you. And that's where the humanity seems to stay in that track of when they contemplate religion. It's a topic that gets people riled up. And that's what I was trying to do with this book, to show that all of these beliefs, everyone has these kind of beliefs, and ultimately a goal of religious tolerance, I guess, would be the ultimate goal of this book.
Are you religious?
No, I'm not religious. I've had, and in my book, I give an example of all the things that I had tried throughout the years. As a journalist, I went to many churches, even in doing this book, all kinds of strange things like Santeria, and I even went to Haiti to try to get close to a voodoo ceremony. Went to all the churches in the U.S., Pentecostal, Evangelical, Catholic, Methodist, Calvinist. Went to services to see what they believe in, as well as doing the research on it. And I found that, of course, there's many people that believe in this, and that's fine. But when you start trying to convince others to believe in your belief, that's when we start having problems in society.
Now, the book is just out, so it's too early to get any kind of, shall we say, backlash. But when you have a book that comes out called God's Fanatics, and it has this topic matter, are you concerned about what you might hear from some religious groups?
Well, no, I'm sure I will. I tried not to disrespect any religion, but I actually did not avoid religions that could be contentious. I mean, I speak about all of the roots of Islam and Catholicism and Christianity, and talk about their actual documents. What I did in research was using their particular documents that they say about their religion, and made it into a short kind of consumer's guide of each religion's high points, low points, what they believe in, what they don't believe in. And plus also, from my other books, there's a sense of humor to this where I'm not really offending anyone, but I'm sure there'll be a backlash of some sort. If you mention names of various people's gods and say anything that they may not want to hear, it will be that. But I mean, I'll tell you, I was raised Catholic. Went to Catholic boys, Jesuits high school and things like that. So, I mean, I think that things that I learned while in school was really not what I found in the actual documents. It was pretty amazing. Things like the Immaculate Conception and stuff. You know, when you talk about this stuff, people start bristling. But what I do is go over the actual document of what is said and let the reader decide if this is reasonable, unreasonable, what they should believe in, what they shouldn't. But in overall, don't try to take too seriously converting others to yours, because there's people that believe in strange things as well. I mean, there's, you know, from a cargo cult who believes that, you know, goods that rolled up on their shore in the South Pacific, they believe they were sent from God, and they actually believe this. So, I mean, that was their religion, which is, to them, was as valid as any of the religions that we have, that we see around us today.
The reason why I ask if you were religious is I'm not saying this book in any way, shape, or form is anti-religion. It's just that when you have this topic matter, you get people who want to attack the messenger as soon as something like this comes out. And as you know, to use another analogy, there the worst anti-smokers out there are former smokers.
That's true. This is the case. I mean, Peter, I don't know really what the reaction is. I think if some, you know, the title God's Lunatics is obviously going to get some people's attention, and that's the point of it. But I think if it's examined in the way that I try to present it, you'll see that everyone has their own beliefs, and it's really should be private, and it's it's not something that I'm trying to convert anyone. I'm presenting the information in a way that hopefully will be add to the dialogue of religious tolerance throughout the world.
Well, I was just about to ask, would you say that a book like yours could open up a dialogue about religions?
Well, I believe so. I mean, I know that most people in America and really don't know too much about other religions, don't know about, the fundamentals of say, Mormonism, or other religions. And I think having a dialogue or having a book where you can go and say, what's this religion about? Where did it come from? Who was the prophet? How did it start? Was it a revelation, or did someone decide to make this set out to make a religion? It kind of adds to the dialogue of that, all of this stuff is, really things that people, imagined as a way to find some answers to the unanswerable question of, where did we come from? I my other books deal with mortality, final exits, and portable obituary. That you had me on your show, this book started from that. In other words, there was a category of, where did religious deaths come from? And deaths in the early days, say our primal ancestors. Could you imagine being in 50,000 years ago, a troop of humans, and one of their loved ones die? I mean, I believe that religion and the answers of where did we come from came from this overwhelming fact of like, where are, how did we get here? Are we alone? What's the purpose of this? And I think religion was the earliest answer that man had to try to answer these philosophical questions.
And maybe even the deeper question on where are we going?
Exactly. The man can imagine, there's more descriptions I found in research of hell, more explicit, details of every level than heaven. Heaven has, nice plays, various views on that. But we could imagine the opposite more easily in literature. That has been the case that I found. And where do we go? So, when that loved one dies or what happens, and I think it's no change from now to our earliest ancestors, was where's this about? And I think religion had been a way for people to answer those philosophical questions. But then when you take a document that's, say, 3,000 years old or 1,200 years old and try to make people believe in those things today in our world, this is where we have conflict. And it's not very reasonable when you look at the origins of many of these beliefs that people are propagating.
The book is called God's Lunatics. It's written by Michael Largo. You can check out his website, michaellargo.com, and the book is available through amazon.com and amazon.ca as well. I thank you very, very much, Michael, for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you, Peter, for having me.
Michael Largo, author of God's Lunatics. You can check out his website at michaellargo.com. You could also visit my website at thestufffile.com. To the What's On page, look for the show. This show's number is 0044. And you'll find links to his site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order the book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
If you're into the paranormal, then you're into Don Ecker and Dark Matters.
Something I have been immersed in for 20 years. Lunar research on items known as lunar transient phenomena. For over 400 years, world-class astronomers have been observing strange sights, lights, flashes, and other things on the moon.
Provocative topics, listeners' calls, and interesting guests.
Guest Mr. Alan Stern.
On my website, I have a list of 100 or so lunar conspiracy theories. I had to kind of come to terms with one of them that I hadn't really thought about.
It's the kind of show that might keep you up at night.
Speculation is, at some time in our past, or perhaps even today, there is another presence on the moon. And I'm not talking about indigenous lunar folks. I'm talking about a space base by somebody else on the far side of the moon.
Dark Matters with Don Ecker, exclusively on CyberStationUSA.com.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And joining us once again after quite a long hiatus, we do indeed have Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby from New York City. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hello, hello. Live from the, well, I was going to say mean streets of New York, but they're not really mean streets of New York. They're kind of nice streets of New York.
It's been a while since we've chatted, almost a year, actually.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I was worried that, maybe I wasn't going to hear from you anymore, but now that I'm hearing from you, I'm feeling good about it.
Well, here we are once again, and I want to get right to some of the things that people can find on your website, which is www.gabby.com, some of the things you're talking about these days, some of the things in the news. Apparently, it's not a good idea. Well, it's never a good idea, but apparently bus drivers get really affected when you spit on them.
Well, okay, I don't want anybody to think that this is some type of an epidemic in New York City. I mean, it's more an example of the fact that we're probably the most litigious, oh, I love that word, society in America. What had happened is that a bus driver was spat upon by a deranged passenger in some kind of a dispute. Well, okay, so it happened, move on. Not quite when it's New York City. What's happened is that the bus driver has decided that she is not able to continue in her bus driving duties, and because of that, she's been home recuperating from the traumatic shock for about 9 months on full pay. That's not a bad deal. Maybe somebody will spat upon me when I'm in my yellow mobile conveyance lounge, and I will be able to stay home for 9 months on full pay.
Meanwhile, there was a story that we had on the program last week that I know you've touched upon, and that is that mosque that is supposed to be at Ground Zero, or actually near Ground Zero.
Well, it's kind of, I think it's kind of pushing it, and the reason that I think it's kind of pushing it is that New York City, which a lot of people don't realize, is one of the largest Muslim cities in the world. We have 200 mosques. 20% of the kids in the school system of New York City are Muslim. So it's a very, very big Muslim community, and it's one in which we really don't have very much problems or troubles in any way whatsoever. This particular Muslim group has decided that we should now have 201 mosques, and they're going to build another mosque, which is fine, okay. But they decide to build it near the World Trade Center site. Well, you know, you can come with all kinds of reasons. You can say that you know, you can't blame all the Muslims for 9/11 and go on and on and on. But the fact of the matter is, it's a sensitive issue. And the very fact that they pushed and got approval for that particular spot was really like opening up a hornet's nest, because you might say it was unreasonable for the community, that particular area, to fight against the mosque. But at the same time, you could question, why did they pick that particular area? So I think you have a situation of sort of like pushing it to make a point, which I don't know, I think is unnecessary, really.
We're talking with Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby from New York City, and let's talk a little bit about football. I know it's a little while away as far as the NFL is concerned, but one of the things that I was, well, quite frankly, stunned at is the fact that New York is getting the Super Bowl. And the reason why I'm stunned is you don't usually hear about cold weather climates getting the Super Bowl.
Yeah, well, you know, see, here was the thing. You know, we build new stadiums in New York. We got a new Yankee Stadium where the Yankees play. We got a new stadium where the Mets play, and a new stadium in New Jersey where the Giants play, and all of that. And each time they started one of these stadiums, I said to myself, oh, well, that's going to be terrific. They're going to build one that has a roof. And each time they spent millions and millions of dollars, built a new stadium, and didn't have the roof. And I got to ask you, how stupid can you be in this day and age to build a stadium, especially in a city or the greater New York City area, where you do have cold weather and it does present problems? I mean, basically, the New York Yankees in the Yankee Stadium only use that stadium a couple of months a year. So New York put in the bid to get the Super Bowl. A lot of people thought, oh, no, it's not going to come here. But they did manage to pull it off, and it is going to be a cold day probably when the game is played. But the fact of the matter is, I can remember in my youth when you saw football, generally it was in cold weather. So the game will be here, and, you know, I for one would love to go to it, except mere mortals never go to Super Bowls. It's always somebody very special.
And we should mention that NFL Super Bowl game is actually the 2014 game that will
yes.
be played in New York, or actually New Jersey, if you want to be really picky about it. Getting back to your side of the water, underground crime, what's the situation with the Brooklyn lawmaker who wants to deal with subway crime?
Well, here's the thing. You have to realize that New York City is number one in no crime. And that's not according to me. That's according to the FBI. So we're doing pretty good. As a matter of fact, last year, out of a total population of 8.5 million people, we had less than 500 people murdered, and they all knew each other. So the statistical probability is that you're not going to be murdered by a stranger. You're going to be murdered by me. But in any event, there is crime here, and it is in the subway, and it gets to be somewhat... I don't know, I wouldn't say exotic, but somewhat different. And two of the crimes that we've had in the subway, one is where bad guys and bad girls, I guess, rob people who are sleeping. And by the way, it's against the law to sleep in the New York subways, but people do fall asleep and they're preyed upon. In addition to that, people who have, let's say, drunk a little too much, a little bit woozy and all of that, they also are getting robbed or were getting robbed. So the New York City Police Department, which loves to play undercover cops, set up a squad specifically of detectives who made believe they were asleep on the subway, and also a squad of detectives who made believe they were drunk. And because of that, they were able to lure, as they say, the perpetrators, arrest them, and now, frankly, it is safe to be drunk and sleeping on the subway. The only thing is, it's against the law, so instead of being robbed, you're going to be arrested.
And what about lewdness and groping? Is that still a problem?
Yeah, well,
down
that happens,
under?
But remember, that happens because you've got subways which are packed. So in addition to that, believe it or not, and as I say, detectives in the New York City Police Department love to act, they would play the role of regular passengers, hoping that somebody would grope them so that they could arrest them. So can you imagine if somebody said to you, if you were one of those cops, hey, Peter, what do you do all day for a living or all evening for a living? You say, oh, I wait to be groped.
Meanwhile, so we should mention right off the bat that groping, lewdness, being robbed while drunk or asleep are never concerns in your cab.
No, that's right. And that's why if you're coming to New York City, mine is the safest mode of transportation unless I decide to grope you.
Okay. Okay. Meanwhile, in other news from New York City, as we talked to Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby from New York, that story, and I saw her picture, quite the fetching young lady, the Citibank employee who was fired because she was too sexy?
Well, you know, that's what she claimed. And the big part of the story is not so much that she claimed that she was fired by Citibank because she was too sexy, and then they had people who said, gee, they went into that bank branch to see her and all of that. Again, it's a very litigious society in which always somebody seems to be suing somebody for something. And call me Mr. Cynical, but I'm not so sure that's exactly why she was fired. The Citibank, acting the role of the major American corporation, is not commenting on it, but I have a funny feeling she is a media creation who has had her 10 minutes of fame.
Okay. And something that's not necessarily an issue above the 49th parallel here in Canada, because it's right across the country here, but I understand in your country, some people are filing lawsuits because they don't like the required cigarette vendors' graphic anti-smoking posters?
Yeah, well, New York City was always in the forefront of all these different health things. I mean, in terms of trans fats and cigarettes and what have you. And it's just about impossible to smoke any place in New York City because of the various laws. And now the city has decided to, you know, go one step further by making it a law that at every cash register, at every store that would be selling cigarettes, there is a sign that says, don't smoke, you're going to die, and all that. Well, the cigarette industry, the major cigarette companies, figure that's like the final straw in the great battle, and they're taking the city to court. But I suspect they're going to lose. And so in addition to not being able to smoke any place in the city, if you do want to buy cigarettes, when you do go to the cash register to pay for them, and they're about $10 a pack now, which is unbelievable, you'll be reminded that it ain't a good idea to do it.
Well, here in Canada, they have not only posters, but the cigarette packages themselves have very graphic pictures of on them, like diseased lungs. They're right on the pack. So you're reminded every time you open the pack and you take out of your pocket what you're doing.
Well, you know, the fact that they passed a law about no smoking in New York City made it easier for cab drivers. Because for very many years, you're always faced with the problem of some guy or lady getting into the cab and saying, you don't mind if I smoke, do you? And you really didn't have much of a choice because, of course, you were looking to have a tip and you didn't want to antagonize the person. So you had to sit there driving the cab and having the cab filled with smoke. Now it's so easy just to say, oh, well, you know, I won't mind if you smoke, but it's against the law, so you can't do it.
And before we let you go, sir, it's been a while since we chatted. Any celebrity sightings of interest?
Well, actually, I saw the Lady Liberty yesterday. Now, you know, you might say, well, what celebrity is that? Well, I think the Statue of Liberty is pretty much of a celebrity. And I had not been there, along with She Who Must Be Obeyed, for about 40 years. So we went out to Bedler's Island, that's what it's called, and we walked around and we saw the statue. And I got to tell you something, many of us in New York kind of take it for granted, but being on the island once again, albeit 40 years, was quite the thing. So this week I'm saying my celebrity sighting for the week was not an actor or an actress, it was Lady Liberty.
And people can find out more information by checking your website at www.gabby.com. You also offer tours, correct?
Yes, I do, and how nice of you to say that. I take people around the city of New York, and they get the chance to see all of the neighborhoods, like Spanish Harlem and Black Harlem and different parts of the city, in addition to the regular tourist attractions.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, Peter. Thank you very much for being on the program.
Thank you.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby from New York City, here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. But before we wrap things up, of course, we do have time for an idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
And we find this idiot in Sabina, Ohio. Police say a man called 911 from the back of a moving tractor trailer after he jumped onto the truck on a dare from friends, then traveled about 10 miles on an Ohio highway. In the call, 24-year-old Brandon Farmer tells the Fayette County dispatcher that it was a stupid idea and that he's, quote, holding on for dear life on U.S. Route 22 near Sabina, about 50 miles southwest of Columbus. The man says he jumped onto the semi as a kind of a joke when it was stopped at a red light. A Sabina police officer pulled over the truck and spotted Farmer still clinging to the back. The driver was completely unaware of the extra cargo that was on board. Sheriff Vernon Stanford says Farmer had been drinking at the time and was charged with disorderly conduct. Well, even though he was drinking, it's still a dumb thing to do. Why would someone jump onto the back of a semi and travel along the highway for about 10 miles, just clinging on for dear life? No, don't blame the alcohol. There's one reason and one reason only. He's an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, number 0044. Hope you enjoyed it. Tell all your friends. The website is thestufffile.com, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's thestufffile.com, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and again, that's 0044. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook is facebook.com/PAHolder, and Twitter is twitter.com/PAHolder. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including cyberstationusa.com, kdxradio.com, streaming on pcjmedia.com, and over the air on World FM 88.2 in New Zealand and Gold FM 90.5 in Singapore. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. A tape of the preceding program will be sent to the Radio Hall of Fame, where it will be placed under the statue of Marconi, which is kind of wobbly.